He can validate your opinion if you took the time to write into the show. 'Cause it's a great debate. Maybe we'll learn something new, 'cause the input comes directly from you for this show. 'Cause it's a great debate. If you don't think our picks are great, a Twitter poll decides its fate. Don't hate us. It's a great debate.
Yeah, I think I could really go pro with this.
Hello and welcome to A Storm of Spoilers off-season tour. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and my method of time travel is the Time Turner, the perfect one from Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, meaning I go anywhere. It's gold.
My name is Joanna Robinson, and my preferred method of time travel is, of course, the TARDIS of Doctor Who fame, because I can not only travel in time, but also in space. So it's a twofer.
And I'm Neil Miller, and if I were to travel through time, I would want to use one of those bubble thingies in Looper. That's kind of fun. It's not so much fun on the other end, but I imagine sitting inside of this like steampunk bubble ship thing would be kind of fun.
So none of us chose whatever it is in Terminator where you have to go naked, because like, who wants to go back in time or forward in time and be immediately like have to go mug some punks on the street for their leather jacket? You know, not me.
It's impractical for sure.
Extremely.
And sounds, I mean, rather,
and none
drafty
of us chose a car, which I guess was also on the table.
Oh, which would have been I just assumed, Neil, you were going to go for the DeLorean or something.
I don't want to be too heavy themed.
What about flying DeLorean's good?
What about the train from Back to the Future 3?
The train is probably the most comfortable. It's like a house on wheels.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have a bathroom. Otherwise, we wouldn't have that hilarious moment caught on camera in Back to the Future Part 3. Google what I'm talking about there. It has to do with little kid's crotch. Actually, don't Google little kid's crotch. What? I'm sorry. Guys, we're here for a time travel great debate. Storm of Spoilers, and we're gonna get definitely gonna go uphill from here in discussing our favorite time travel movies, fiction, and television shows. This will culminate in a Twitter poll where you will decide the ultimate time travel movies as decided by Storm of Spoilers 2019. Period. If you are a member of our Patreon at patreon.com/stormofspoilers at the Maesters or Small Council level, you will get a bonus segment this week where we will be discussing our Oscar nominations and touching in on our foolish Oscar bets that we made before nominations, which now seems ridiculous because it was a weird nomination year for the Oscars.
I don't know.
We'll
I don't feel so
about
bad
that
about it.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure Neil feels okay.
Yeah, Neil in front feels fine.
And also, this is your weekly reminder that Con of Thrones tickets are on sale July 12th through 14th in Nashville. Will be Con of Thrones. If you buy tickets, guys, is there some way you could get like a credit towards us?
Like a discount code?
Is the code
that sounds like workable?
Pew pew pew.
Oh man, missed opportunity.
It's close. It's the word storm. STORM. Use promo code STORM, and you get a discount off your Con of Thrones tickets.
I think it's $5 off.
I guess it is.
That's what I remember from the thing.
And then they'll also tag your ticket sales to us so we know that you're pledged allegiance, which is equally as important.
Pledge allegiance to the storm. Oh, I think it's...
Then we get your address and credit card number, which is equally as important.
I think it's...
Most of all, your mother's maiden name.
If enough people use our code, we'll get some free ones to give away. So if you want to help out your fellow Stormies, use our code.
I feel like Excellent. You guys are bad at sales. You're like, these sales will track you and also they'll benefit other people. So go ahead and do this.
But some people like people. Some people like doing stuff for other people.
Look, I'm too old to explain why socialism's good to just everybody. Joanna, do we have any reviews this week?
Google little kids crotch. sandwiches. All right.
And we take your credit card number. I'm on a roll. Just minutes into this podcast.
We have a couple great new reviews. This one is, the first one's 5 stars by someone called Hula Hoop's Biggest Fan. So, you know, for the kids. This one, the title of the review is, my recommendation, colon, listen to every episode, exclamation mark. Hey, I've listened to the podcast for years now, maybe since 2015, but finally felt compelled to write a review after listening to the Glass episode, which is not an episode I thought would ever win us a fan. I reluctantly listened to it today, Saturday, after it posted, because I was bored to tears and, when you know it, enjoyed it myself immensely. The only M. Night Shyamalan movie I've ever seen was The Village. I was a very precocious child who loved stories about Puritans and felt completely betrayed by the twist in that one. So you can understand why I didn't feel the need to listen to a podcast about Glass. You'd think after listening to Joanna, Dave, and Neil for so long, I'd have known better. This podcast is always great, whether about Game of Thrones or something I know nothing about. Various Tremors episodes included. Keep up the good work, people, and I'll be listening to every episode. P.S. managed to not fall down last year, but head to D.C.
Yes.
with my 8th grade students next week in a blizzard, so pray for me.
Oh, man.
Our fingers are crossed for you, Hulu, who's the biggest fan. Thank you so much. And then one really quick one from Amy Newswanger. 5 stars. Love it. I've been listening to this since season 6 of Game of Thrones and was avoiding the off-season tour. Oh, no, I'm sorry. And was avoiding the off-season tour. But now I'm all in. Subscribe to the Patreon, folks. It's worth every penny. These delightful hosts continue the fun conversations in the Slack. Best $10 I spend each month. Thank you so much, Amy, and Hula Hoop's Biggest Fan, for those reviews. We really appreciate it. Please rate, review us on iTunes. It helps other people find us and join this great community.
You know how I spent a good $10 this week?
How's that?
I was visiting my grandmother, and I bought her a Don't Fall Down pin after she was telling me how terrified she was of falling down.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, hey, Grandma, you could just go to chaosislit.com and get yourself a Don't Fall Down pin. But until then, here's one I got for you, because I knew I had to, like, pin it to her shirt right then. And she was delighted, and then made me explain what a podcast was. It was fantastic.
So I was maybe going to mention this later, but I'm going to mention it now. I was going to buy a Don't Fall Down pin from chaosislit.com, and I still might. But as those of you in the Slack know, I, once again, true to form, am out of the race.
Wait, you're out again?
Yeah.
Oh, what happened?
Dave, you already know the story. I don't know why you're laughing so raucously. I fell down on the same pair of well-mopped, shiny hardwood steps in my house with the same pair of fuzzy, slippery winter socks on. And it was like a full Looney Tunes fall. And my first thought as I hit the ground was like, I could lie about this. And then I was like, no, then you're going to have to lie for a whole calendar year. And that's some bad juju. So, and then our producer, Diana, who also happens to live in this house, was like, I will lie for you. And I was like, no, let's keep ourselves clean.
That's why she's the producer, though. She, yeah, she shows out.
That's a good point.
So, anyway, I fell down, I did significantly, bruise my own ass, but,
ouch.
Mostly I bruised my, you know, ego. So, should be noted that in 2018, when I fell down right around this time, last year, I didn't fall again.
It's like a tradition.
I didn't fall again for the rest of the year. So I'm hoping, knock on wood.
Yeah, maybe you just got to get it out of the way.
Get it out of the way in January is Joanna's tradition. And then she's like, it's smooth sailing till 2020. So,
yeah. Or we should just shift your years so you're on like the Chinese calendar. So you're actually getting closer every year to completing it. And just like weeks before, like, no.
Anyway.
We should design another pin that just says hashtag don't fall down again. And it's for all down. The people who need a mulligan. It's for everyone who falls down
in
January.
Like, get back up or something like that.
Yeah.
Hashtag tub.
Yeah, some sort of Chumbawamba reference. Anyway, go to chaosislit.com, buy your pin. Maybe it will save you. I did not act fast enough.
Neil, you know what that means.
Oh, I think it means that we're headed to a place far, far away where we'll be storm chasing. Pew, pew, pew.
Did you guys know, listening, that I do finger guns when I do that? Now you know.
You do finger
guns,
too?
I had a feeling. Yeah.
Well, are they guns, or are they a storm? I'm very confused.
Like, it's sort of like a Yosemite Sam. It's not a
right.
hors d'oeuvre.
It's like a cartoon finger yeah. guns. You know
yeah.
what it is.
Yeah, Yosemite Sam over my head sort of thing. It's not like a Laura Dern out of the fog with her blaster pew-pew-pewing. So.
Got
cool.
it.
Cool. All right. So this is the section where... we talk about what pop culture storm we are chasing this week. This could be a movie, a show, a book, a story, podcast, or etc. Mine this week is etc. I would like to talk about why it is I don't have any other good storms that I've been chasing. Yes, I'm progressing on The Expanse just fine. It'll be fine for next week. yes, I get my daily dose of Letterkenny. But... I'm having to spend a lot of time cleaning up and receiving packages and then figuring out what to do with a lot of movie swag. I don't know if you guys are dealing with this week, but today I received what might be the coolest and least useful piece of movie swag I've ever gotten. It is a bomber jacket for the movie First Man. So it's like a Neil Armstrong style bomber jacket with a First Man patch. It is two sizes too small. So I will never be able to wear it. So now I have to figure out what to do with this very nice jacket. And this, there's like a hardbound annotated cover of the screenplay. So,
what does it, the patch says like First Man on it?
Yeah, it says like First Man. It's like, it's obviously movie related. It's not like it would be cooler if it were like a NASA thing. And I would actually be madder about the fact that it's way too small for me. But this happens a lot. So I just want, what I'm chasing is
problem.
I'm chasing the future that Marie Kondo would envision for me, which is getting rid of this stuff. So keep an eye on my Twitter because I might just be giving it away real soon.
Oh, that's better than what I do. So what I have a box in my house, a large box that all the stuff goes into. I keep like. And I hope no publicists are listening. I keep like...
yeah, I didn't mean to like out any...
5 to 3% of what they send me. Because we get so much stuff. Because I'm in both the Television Critics Association and the Critics' Choice. Like,
yeah, once you're on a critics list, it's like an avalanche of...
It's bad. And I know, once again, first world problems. Oh, we get too much cool free stuff. Poor us. But you know, sometimes the jackets are the wrong size or you already have like... a flash drive or 20 or a water bottle or a blanket or a backpack or whatever it is they sent you. So I've got a big box in my house that I just like put all the stuff into. And then whenever we have people over, which we do like somewhat regularly, they know that there's like a free box in our house that they can just loot.
Oh my.
And then
that is a revolutionary idea.
And then when it gets like when the stuff's been there too long, I just take it to Goodwill. That's my,
This is most excellent. This has saved me on shipping.
If you want a throw pillow with the word Roma emblazoned over it, then you might want to go to the Goodwill in Oakland where you will find it.
Oh man. Yeah. So that's been taking up a lot of my time. Also, I know we're going to talk about this later, but, I did watch First Man again because it's really great, and I'm very sad about it not getting more Oscar nominations. So
that's gore snub, pretty bad.
Yeah. Anyway, Joanna, what are you chasing this week?
Well, I just want to. I think I'm sure I've put it on here before, maybe more than once, but I just want to stump once again for the sci-fi series The Magicians, which starts.
What? I've never heard of this.
Which starts its fourth season Wednesday of this week, so when this podcast drops, I believe. And has just today, Tuesday, been renewed for season 5 because it's so great. And you can watch seasons 1 through 3 on Netflix. They just get better and better and better. Season 1, little rocky. Just like Buffy, and then like 2 and 3 were just like firing on all cylinders. So this is the show that almost won the poll, the listener poll, for us to do an episode about next week. It's the one I kind of, sorry, Expanse heads. It's the one I wanted to have. Like, I almost just made us do a Magicians episode, and then I got the whole idea of like democracy and letting our listeners vote. Like, this is Dave's thing, and I was trying it out, and I regret everything. No, I don't. I'm glad we're watching The Expanse. Anyway, watching The Expanse, if you didn't know, because our listeners voted on that, but my heart, winner of my heart is The Magicians, which is, I think, maybe my favorite show on television. It's really, really good. I really,
really
recommend it.
Interesting.
I think so. I can't think of one that beats it. No, I think it's The Magicians. And maybe maybe it's like my favorite because I don't have a podcast about it or I don't have to write about it. So it's just like pure pleasure. I occasionally write about it, but like mostly.
You don't have to pause it like every 3 minutes and like take a screenshot and get a GIF going.
Make a GIF out of it.
I can just watch it. So Magicians, join me. And then, you know, if you're in our Slack, we've got a channel going just for people watching The Magicians. So season 4, get on board.
Awesome. Dave, what do you got?
So, as Joanna mentioned, we're doing an Expanse episode next week, and in catching up, I was left on tenterhooks at the season 3 finale, and decided I needed more Expanse in my life, so I dove right into Leviathan Wakes, the first novel in the series. The author is on the cover as James S.A. Corey. It's actually a pen name of two different people. I'm not going to go too far into it. I'm sure we're going to spend a lot of time next week talking about what The Expanse is. But it's interesting being on this side of Storm of Spoilers because this book is like...
I was just going to say, are we about to do a Dave Snobby Book Reader podcast?
It's like a hardcore sci-fi, like, world building. Like, there'll be like paragraphs about like, here's why we get into these suits and here's why these suits are these shapes and here's what all the arms of our like breaching pod does. And I'm like, yes. And a lot of it is, you know, transferred over to the television series. The television series has some great space sequences and some really good, polygons at times. But actually having the science turn into a world, especially with stuff like, the Belter Society and stuff on Ceres in the first book, is pretty great reading. So, chances are I might have gotten hooked into a 9-book series with a whole bunch of short stories here, but I'm at least doing the first book and enjoying the heck out of it, even though I know it's going to happen from the television series. And so far, the plots aren't like drastically similar, dissimilar enough. It's been a lot of simplifying, like different corporations and different navies have been rearranged to make everything a bit more simple. But of course, we'll cover all of that next week when we do a
very good preview
of
next. If anyone had any doubts about whether or not we were going to really dig in to The Expanse, I feel like that has, they should feel relieved.
Democracy worked out for me in this case because I ended up really enjoying the show I was forced to watch. Actually, again, the two times I've been forced to watch shows, it's been Letterkenny and The Expanse, and they both are positive.
No, because I tried to get you to watch Lovesick, and you mistakenly think it's not a good show. So,
oh, yeah. Okay, so 2 out of 3. Yeah.
2 out of 3 ain't bad, as they say.
Ain't bad.
As it says in the song.
Okay, that's it. That's all we have for Storm Chasing.
Before we get into the general time travel discussion, I'm going to time travel back to something that Joanna said previously in the episode. You were wearing the same slippers and socks you were last year. Do you need to upgrade your sock game?
It's true. I have not gotten new socks in a very long time. And this pair let me down twice.
Well, that seems like a good time to recommend to you and to all of our listeners the Mack Weldon line of underwear, socks, and undershirts. They look good and they perform well too. That includes working out, not falling down, listening to podcasts, all the activities we know you enjoy as much as we do.
I gotta say, like, before we get to Neil and his wealth of Mack Weldon experience, I just want to say with my, like, light Mack Weldon experience, I mostly ordered, like, they've got these really cozy thermals. Like, this is the perfect cozy winter clothing for binge watching all the shows like The Magicians or The Expanse that you need to watch in order to keep up with our show. So if you have some hardcore couch time binge watching to do, I really recommend some Mack Weldon. Neil, what do you do with your Mack Weldon?
Guys, I was so excited when we got Mack Weldon because let me tell you what I have in my drawers now. We have the section of Mack Weldon where I keep all of those, and then a section of old underwear that probably needs to be thrown away from brands I don't remember. Like, my one thing is, like, before I started ordering from Mack Weldon, and I have the full range. I have some of the silver underwear. I'm part of the loyalty program on their very easy to use website. I don't remember what kind of brands of underwear I used to wear. Mack Weldon is just, it's sort of my thing now.
You're a real Mack head now.
I am. We need to come up with a better name for that.
I don't know.
Well bought. You're a Wellbot. As a Wellbot sock bot.
So you're saying if you were to Marie Kondo your clothing and get rid of like all the stuff that does not spark joy for you, everything remaining would be Mack Weldon.
At least in the top drawer, for sure. I even did just recently get specific to Joanna's needs, I did get one of the pairs of silver socks. And they're super comfy. And here's what I like about them. I wear these shoes that are like wool, and they're normally very comfortable, but sometimes with socks, it gets a little too hot. The Mack Weldon socks breathe brilliantly. So I'm, you know.
Yeah. And when he says silver, that means there's silver in them.
Oh, yeah.
And that wicks the odor away from your foot. It's pretty amazing. And not only that, their website is super easy to use and order from. I've got more socks on the way because Mack Weldon socks just have like that perfect fabric for me. I'm going to try some boxer briefs this time around to get a home for my boys. And you too can get some loungewear, some podcast wear.
Yeah,
it was good. For 20% off your first order, you could visit MackWeldon.com and enter the promo code STORM at checkout and join us. Mostly unfallen, but definitely all comfy with some Mack Weldon. That's MackWeldon.com and enter promo code STORM at checkout. And we're back for the meat and potatoes of this time travel podcast, the actual debates. We're going to start off with the time travel fiction portion of our show, leading in to the time travel TV show portion of our show. Then a little break and ending with the Battle Royale time travel movie, which is going to have a ton of populist and weird choices and debate. But first, time travel fiction. We've each brought, as per the usual for a great debate, each host has brought something. We've also chose some listener selections. We had some sort of discussion as to what listener selections were or were not time travel in some cases. We will include those discussions and thoughts in this podcast, even if we don't include them as like a pick, because some of them are interesting. I'm stalling. Let's start with time travel fiction. I'm going to go first. I picked a short story that was originally published by Ray Bradbury in Playboy magazine. It is The Toyinbee Convector.
Did you say Ray Bradbury in the magazine?
Ray Bradbury in the magazine.
Isn't there a famous Ray Bradbury short story where like language changes entirely because of stepping on a butterfly? I don't think I've read the toy.
Little Boy Crotch Magazine is actually a good name for a manga. I'm sorry. Neil, have you read it?
Mm-mm.
Okay, so the slight spoilers for this, but I think in order to sell yourself on it, you have to kind of understand the full short story. It is a short story.
I feel like we should, it's slight spoilers for a lot of these things.
As is the you know, problem with time travel occasionally. The Toyinbee Convector tells the story of a reporter who goes to visit a 130-year-old man who is dying, and this man is the only man who has ever successfully time traveled. In the past, at around like 1984, obviously when the story was published, but in that time, the 80s present, this man jumped forward in time, came back in time, and brought with him films and stories and historical documents that suggested that humanity was capable of building itself from the crappy early 80s to a utopia where everybody was happy and fed and whatnot. And these artifacts from the future inspire humanity to actually take up those projects and create those artifacts. And the twist at the end of the story, as you might suspect being, you know, good storytelling listeners, is that the time traveler says he never actually went forward in time. He just knew that humanity was capable of creating a utopia. He dies, fireworks explode above his head, which he has engineered to make it look like that's himself time traveling forward and complete his lie. And the reporter decides that instead of tell everybody, as was the time traveler's wish, so that humanity knew they always had it in them, he's going to keep the lie up and attempt to try another fake travel into the future to ensure humanity's utopia.
Well, that's like some Firefest kind of bullshit right there. Sorry.
It
you got caught in one lie, just parlay it right into the next lie. It's fine. All right. I guess that
it
was
is,
my
but
storm chaser.
lying for Utopia. Oh. You and everybody else. I know. I had to explain that to Java's mom, like what Fire Festival was, and it took like 30 minutes just to get to the documentaries. Anyway, Toynbee Convector, look it up. One of the cool things about the Toynbee Convector spreading into real life is there are these things called Toynbee tiles around New York City and other East Coast cities. They were sort of mysterious art projects. There is a documentary about the man who was creating them, and he sort of didn't want to be found. But I used to do this thing when I lived in Manhattan where I would walk all the Toynbee tiles on Manhattan, and it kind of takes you up and down the island. Pretty cool. It has a quote from the Toynbee Convector on it. That's why it's called Toynbee Tiles. And the man was kind of hoping that humanity could better itself with these random acts of art. That's a lot loaded into my pick, but that's because I hope I win. Joanna, what do you pick for time travel fiction?
Well, I want to really quickly say that the Ray Bradbury story that I was thinking of is called The Sound of Thunder, of course, not like A Time of Thunder, whatever I said. And that's the one famously where, you know, someone steps on a butterfly and it changes everything. And that made me realize that what a shame none of us picked the Ashton Kutcher classic, The Butterfly Effect, for, spoiler alert, for our pick later on in the episode. So, you know, pour one out for The Butterfly Effect. Okay, so my actual pick is a 1992 science fiction. Nope, 1997. It's a 1997 science fiction novel by the great Connie Willis, who's like a Hugo Award winner. She wrote the Doomsday Book, Blackout. She loves writing about time travel. She loves writing, they're sort of like humorous, nerdy history sort of stuff. And this one is my favorite one because, so it's called To Say Nothing of the Dog, which is the subtitle of a book called Three Men in a Boat. It's Three Men in a Boat is a 1889 book about three men, you know, rowing down the Thames and the misadventures they have. And there's a dog in the boat with them. So it's Three Men in a Boat, To Say Nothing of the Dog. And this book is just called To Say Nothing of the Dog. And the subtitle of this book is called, or How We Found the Bishop's Bird Stump at Last. Anyway, it is a novel about what if historians could travel through time. These particular historians have traveled back in time to 1940. They're studying what, like, the effects of the Blitz from World War II on England, and sort of trying to find certain artifacts and trying to figure it all out. And basically they go back in time to this era, and what it becomes is a, like, very classic British mystery with a lot of allusions to Agatha Christie, which you're reading for our book club in the Patreon Slack, but also Dorothy Sayers and a bunch of other stuff. So, like, if you love British stuff, if you love mysteries, if you love history, if you love sci-fi, this book is so endlessly charming, and I've read it 1 million times. One last thing I will say about this. Like, if you ever are like, oh, things Joanna like, I usually like, this is like distilled all of my interests into one book, and it's one of my favorite books of all time. One thing I will say really quickly is that Neil and Dave had mentioned to me a couple times before we started recording this that they were picking things that they thought could win the polls. I've picked something that I know will definitely not win the polls because I think there's like exactly...
Somebody has to.
I think there's exactly like two people listening who have read this book. So, like, but if you haven't, do yourself a solid. Please go read it. Connie Willis is a genius. Doomsday Book is also a great book. Like, just check her out. Check this book out. It's a favorite. Do it. Done. Bye.
Neil.
Yes.
You're up.
Okay. I'm bringing some much needed populism to this whole thing. Well, and actually, mine has an advantage. My selection is the Days of Future Past's Marvel Comics storyline from 1981, written Ooh. By Chris Claremont, John Byrne, and Terry Austin. It was recently popularized with the film series. And the movie X-Men Days of Future Past, but it's a little different. So this, the Uncanny X-Men, it's issues 141, 142. It's this storyline that involves very heavily Kitty Pride, whereas the movie is that sends Wolverine. And I think what's really interesting about it is it was one of those first sort of mainstream story things that did this. There was this theory in 1951 about saying that the only way time travel is possible is to like send a person back to their old body. And so this was sort of popularized that notion, which I found very interesting. Also, the comic book is wild as hell compared to the movie. There's like lizard, alien, demons, and there's this weird like Dante's Inferno thing where they have to like go down into the depths of hell to save Nightcrawler. It's all over the place. But the reason why I picked it, one, because people recognize it from the movie, but also because it looked at a different kind of time travel. Like a lot of other stories consider time travel is you put a person into a device, that device either sends the person back or goes back with the person inside of it, and they can like see themselves. In this theory of time travel, it is the same person just with their different, I guess, soul or mind. So that's it. Days of Future Past, the 1981. It's very easily accessible from the Marvel Comics app they may have the graphic novel at your local comic shop as well.
Yeah.
I shouldn't do that, actually, because the animated series version of Days of Future Past is very different.
Is it like a third different? I don't remember the one from the animated series. There's like three different versions of the story out there.
Yes, for sure. Yeah. But the comic book one was definitely the one that picked it up first. All good picks. So we're going to have our host picks in one set poll smashed up against our listener picks. I'm going to represent here for Jesse, who suggested Slaughterhouse-Five. Slaughterhouse-Five.
Vonnegut?
If you have not read this Kurt Vonnegut novel, is an anti-war novel about a man named Billy Pilgrim, who is unstuck in time because of his post-traumatic stress disorder caused by being present at the bombing of Dresden in World War II. It also involves him traveling to... I gotta look up this word. I have to be looking at it while I'm pronouncing it because I'm not good at that, even when it's normal words. The Tralfamadorian
Mangazine.
Planet.
Oh.
Mangazine. It's they are a bunch of beings who are fourth dimensional beings, which means they could see all points in time at once. They mate him with a movie star who was supposedly drowned in the ocean, and then he continues skipping through time. We don't know what's true about Billy Pilgrim's reality and exactly when he dies or if he is unstuck in time, but the novel's not really about that. It's about how war is terrible and humans are terrible to each other. There's not really any way to spoil this novel. I think I read it for the first time in high school and immediately enjoyed it. There are parts of it that I revisit from time to time, especially passages about how to think about time and also how terrible war is. It's definitely... will remain like a seminal Western canon time travel story for long periods of time, even if it doesn't win this listener great debate, which I feel it should. Go ahead.
All right. I'm going to hop on next and talk about a pair of comic books. One that we feel qualified, one that we feel doesn't. The one that we feel qualified is called Paper Girls by Brian K. Vaughan, illustrated by Cliff Ching. And, it was nominated by listener Ryan S. And, this is, Brian K. Vaughan is sort of like a must read, comic book writer. He wrote for Why the Last Man, Runaways, Saga, obviously. And then also he worked on Lost. So he is like a real genre timey-wimey guy. But, Paper Girls is set in 1988, and it is that genre of story that we like to call, when we were talking about Stranger Things, we started to call kids on bikes, right? So it's like four girls on bikes out delivering newspapers, or out on like a Halloween night, 1988. And they encounter some time travels. And basically they get caught up in a time war, between two factions of time travelers. There's the old timers, who are the first generation following the invention of time travel, who believe, like Ray Bradbury did, that you should preserve the original timeline and rules, and they have like really strict rules. And then there's the teenagers, who are the descendants of the old timers, and they like the idea of altering history. And this is like, this seems like Very, very much like what will happen when time travel events. It's sort of like, it's sort of like when the internet was invented. When the internet was invented, the people who invented it were like, oh, the discourse on the internet should remain the same and truth.
This will connect all the minds across the planet.
And then the next generation came up and they're like, anarchy! So, you know, I can see that happening with time travel. I hope I didn't just blow out your ears with that. Okay. It's a great, it's a great book. It's one that like takes a little while to warm up. Like all the timey-wimey-ness sort of comes eventually, but it's got a great core, girl gang in it and stuff like that. So it's a really fun book. Great art. The one that I did not include despite my love, undying love for Neil Gaiman is a listener, Sean recommended the Hobgadling storyline from Sandman. Sandman has like a million different storylines. So if you don't remember the Hobgadling one, even though you've read Sandman, the reason it's disqualified is that even though Hobgadling's story hops through time, he's immortal. He's not a time traveler. So like he doesn't go back in time. He just doesn't die. So we were talking about this before we sort of picked all of our choices.
I think it was like the one rule we came up with.
It was like, if you're immortal, so if you're like a vampire or a Highlander or whatever it is, and even though your story might flash through time, you are not flashing through time, then that's not exactly time travel. So, with love and respect to Sean, Sandman is disqualified. We will have another question mark about this when we get to the movie section. But Paper Girls is in. Neil, what's your listener book nomination?
So I am here to rep for on Colby's behalf, Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. And as I did previously, I'd like to just sort of lay out the case for time travel, because that's sort of the importance of this book, I guess, is that this is where, correct me if I'm wrong, J.K. Rowling introduced time travel into the Wizarding world. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So in the theory of time travel in the Wizarding world is it's a single timeline, so that you can't split a timeline. You can't go back and make changes. You can only go forward and make changes to things that you have predicted. And then the things that happen were always supposed to happen based on what maybe you changed.
80% right? Correct.
80%. See, I figured I would get it. So, and a single timeline is also another interesting thing because, you know, like when we think of, you know, shows like Rick and Morty, for example, this is another sort of like timey-wimey, spacey show. You have different theories of like the multiverse theory. So a single timeline theory is very interesting. Also, Prisoner of Azkaban, very good book that became an even better movie. So, you know, it's a good candidate.
Yeah, Colby was saying is the best book in the series. I don't know if I agree with that. Maybe I do.
I don't feel strongly enough. I don't know Harry Potter well enough to really go with him on that one.
I certainly think it's the best film. Dave is our like resident Potterhead expert who knows things about the P-Lock. What is Azkaban? It's not my fault that you know so much about bathrooms. Is Azkaban the best book in the series?
Is Azkaban the best book in the series? No, that's Goblet of Fire.
Okay.
But Azkaban's really good, and I think what's really cool, and especially compared to the other stories on this time travel fiction list, is Azkaban doesn't reveal it's a time travel story until it needs to, and then it spends its time while it's time traveling, peppering going back through the narrative and revealing how it was always going to be a time travel story. And I think narratively, that's a really cool turn, that it's not that any of these, you know, actually all of these stories have really cool narrative turns, but I think that's what sets Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, the novel, apart, especially from the other Harry Potter books, with the exception of Cursed Child, which is also about this. But the neatness of the narrative to have to go back and reveal that things that you took as being magical weren't magical, they were time travel, is kind of cool.
I do like this. I mean, we're going to hop over to TV now, but like, I do like the idea that a couple thing about time, like we didn't talk about like what we like about time travel stories. Dave could like really genuinely talk to you guys for hours about this because I've seen him make like Terminator charts before. The idea of like the self-fulfilling prophecy, like the more you try to change the past, the more you're actually creating the history that you're trying to avoid, is something that I really like. And then also, just the notion of paradoxes is also quite interesting. All right. Is it TV time?
Yeah, that was the fiction. All right. Yeah. Throw in thoughts like that if we skip along them, because yes, each one of these little nominees has its own little quirk that I think makes it, worthy of being on these lists. I'm going to start with time travel TV show by repping for something that when I told my friends that I thought DC's Legends of Tomorrow season 4 was the best television show of 2018, the number one answer was, well, did you see The Americans? And I was like, no. And they were like, of course. And then they stopped listening to me. I wish they would listen to me and look at Legends of Tomorrow, which not since like, more whimsical Doctor Who days have I had fun on week to week basis, just seeing what they're going to come up with. The basis of the show, in case you haven't heard me rant about it before, if this is your first episode of Star Wars Spoilers, Google Children Crotch Magazine. But if this is not, you will remember this is the superheroes on a time-traveling ship trying to correct time either from time abnormalities or fantasy creatures or magical demons popping into things like the 80s or kidnapping George Lucas or going to visit Barack Obama in college. It's ridiculous. It's just for fun. And then I think the thing that Legends of Tomorrow does so well, that I think a lot of these TV shows do so well, and I think it might be like what I would say is a thing to look for in distinguishing a good time travel series versus a bad time travel series, is a lack of rules or changing rules can be used and still feel correct in your story. And that sort of like timey-wimey-ness of it can be used to your advantage and not as like a chain that sometimes like locks you down to a plot in like some movies where the whole trick of time travel is that it needs to be perfect. TV shows have to keep it fresh episode after episode, which means breaking some rules. The better a TV show could be at distracting you that it's breaking rules or making it seem like those rule breaks are completely natural, I think makes for a better time travel TV show. And I never care about the rules being broken on Legends because I'm having too much fun. Legends of Tomorrow, Spike's Football. Joanna.
Almost everything you said about Legends is what I would say about The Magicians, by the way. Like, I really think you would like that idea of knowing what the rules are of television are so well that you can break them in such an entertaining way that nobody minds is exactly what The Magicians does. So maybe we should do like a hostage exchange and I'll watch more Legends if you watch more Magicians. We can talk about that off air. All right.
hostage exchange episode.
I need to know what Neil is. Actually, I need to know what Neil is going to do first because he threatened two different things before I do mine. So, Neil, let me know what you're
doing. Oh, no. That's tough. Anyway, I'm going with my original pick.
Okay, good.
I'm sticking with Doctor Who. For several reasons. One, I think Doctor Who is time travel on multiple different levels. Not only because you can watch the modern day version with Jodie Whittaker or the Peter Capaldi or David Tennant or any of the other modern doctors.
Yeah, Matt any Smith, of the other doctors.
Matt Skip, Smith,
thank you.
The other guy.
Sorry. Chris. Everyone needs their favorite mentioned. Mention all the doctors, Neil.
What's Eccleston? Chris Eccleston. See, I did it. I did all of them. I can't do the other ones. I'm
all
sorry.
Of them.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I can't do the old ones.
What about John Hurt, the war doctor? Jinx, you owe me two episodes of Legends of Tomorrow.
But here's the great thing about Doctor Who. You can watch the current version. It is about time travel. It's about time and space travel because the TARDIS is the ultimate time and space vehicle. Much bigger on the inside, as you know. But if you want to go back and watch some of the very old Doctor Who, that's also a form of time travel because the show has been on for 50 some years. So it's really, you can watch the evolution of television effects or television effects done at a certain level, throughout history, the real history. So it's a double thing. It's an entendre situation. So anyway, but Doctor Who, I mean, obviously.
It's a great choice.
If you're going to have an argument where you could say this show's old and that makes it better, the time travel great debate was a good place to whip that out.
It's true. It's true. Okay, so just to piggyback off the Doctor Who thing really quickly before I get into mine, is to say, you know, every time we've said timey-wimey throughout this episode, that's from a stellar episode of Doctor Who. If you've never watched Doctor Who, you might want to just load up the episode Blink, which is a David Tennant episode, which is like the most time travel-y, like most Prisoner of Azkaban-y episode of Doctor Who. Despite the fact that he travels through time, this is like a very time travel one, and it's got a very young Carey Mulligan in it, and it is very good. And that's where the phrase wibbly wobbly, timey wimey, if you've ever heard it, comes from. So, as the Doctor tries to sort of like hand wave away, some questions about the rules. All right.
Well, so, Doctor Who is another good example of a show that, its rules evolve with whatever it needs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then we want to hat tip, two other episodes, but not, even though we're not going to talk about those series, one is Game of Thrones, which is not, you know, very much a time travel show, but we're going to like just give a nod to The Door, which is Hodor's goodbye episode, which is a little, hop and skip through time. It's not time.
Good use of time. Well, yeah. I guess Bran does travel sort of back to Witness.
Yeah.
It's an enhanced flashback.
It's an enhanced flashback. and The Door owes a lot of its emotional resonance to maybe an episode of television that inspired it. It certainly was directed by the same person, Jack Bender, who directed the best episode of Lost, as far as I'm concerned, one of the best episodes of television ever, The Constant, which is about, you know, someone coming a little unstuck in time and needing to figure out where they belong. So those are two excellent time travel episodes. But my time travel show overall, as some of our listeners in the Slack predicted I would pick, is the 80s and early 90s classic Quantum Leap, starring Scott Bakula. If you don't know what this show is about, it is about Dr. Sam Beckett, who steps into a time travel machine and vanishes, and he hops from life to life, hoping each time putting right what went wrong, and hoping each time the next leap will be the leap home. Basically, it's about a guy who travels through time. He inhabits the body of various figures in his own lifespan. He can only travel within his own lifespan, so they were sort of limited by that rule. I don't know why they made that rule, but they were limited by that rule for the series. So he's like doing a lot of 60s stuff. He's hoping that, like, he arrives. It's a procedural show. He arrives. There's some very minor injustice, some very like Murder, She Wrote level minor injustice going on. Or sometimes it's big. Sometimes it's like the fucking civil rights movement or whatever. But like, it's a minor injustice going on.
There's some minor injustice.
Well, sometimes it's like an actor's
It's too got drunk. Range is what you're saying.
Sometimes an actor's too drunk to appear a man in La Mancha. So like, Dr. Sam Beckett has to step in and play the role inhabiting the body of this guy. But
how do you not like Legends of Tomorrow? You're so, so weird.
But he's aided by the fact, two things. He's got a best friend, Al, who appears as a hologram to help him. My favorite use of Al is when Dr. Beckett had to inhabit a, like, pool shark guy. He doesn't know how to play pool. So Al had to, like, use a hologram to, like, show him where to strike the ball so that it would hit the other balls. And you can see the little laser things, but the people in like, real world can't see it. But the best episode is obviously the aforementioned Man of La Mancha episode, where Dr. Sam Beckett, because he has eidetic memory, photographic memory, he can memorize his lines immediately just by looking at them. And then you get to watch Scott Bakula sing freaking Don Quixote songs, and it's great.
I'm Don Quixote. Yeah. He's Man of La Mancha.
Yeah, that's how the tune goes. He's dreaming the impossible dream. So Quantum Leap, oh boy, it's very dated. I've tried to watch it. It doesn't exactly stand the test of time. But every time they mention, like, maybe rebooting it, I'm like, yeah, reboot Quantum Leap. Give us a different time frame through which to jump. And give us maybe a lady jumper. I don't know. I mean, there was a lot of, like, weird, you know, gender humor whenever he, like, leapt into a lady and stuff like that that, like, doesn't really hold up. But Scott Bakula, what a treat. Especially the one where he leaps into his brother's body. Okay.
What if you reboot Quantum Leap, but it's an anthology series and we know somebody's leaping, but we actually see the different bodies? And then, like, season, the end of season one, we get to see the leaper or something.
Oh. Oh, that's fun. So then you get like a
and whole it's a Lost series. And it's wait. Let me keep going.
And then it's a Dharma station. And this is from
great.
This is from Ryan Murphy, so all of Ryan Murphy's actresses will be there, and it will be great. It'll be everything Dave could ever want. No, honestly,
yes, it was Emma Roberts jumping the whole time.
Anytime, surprise, bitch. So anytime you've ever wanted to know what my childhood was like, watch Quantum Leap or Highlander, and you'll know how I feel about time travel. Or not. Highlander's not a time travel show. Okay. Listener ones. We didn't lay claim to any of them. Who wants to go first?
I guess I will, because that was a long pause. Here we go. Listener email number one is from Zach, who says, the Netflix time travel show Travelers is criminally underrated, kind of like a mashup of Terminator and Freaky Friday. It combines great characters with an amazingly simple yet well thought out, thorough time travel mechanism. People from the 23rd century are sent back in time to stop us fucking up human civilization, and they do it by stealing the bodies of people who would otherwise have died in our time. Coupled with a 6 feet under style introduction each time a time traveler is sent back, so many time travel shows get hopelessly lost in a mirage of paradoxes and crazy devices. This show avoids all of that with a simple premise and then goes on to inventingly explore it in a lot of ways. Best of all, there is no cackling evil villain, except perhaps human nature. Just plenty of antagonists, which with reasonable motivations, which lead them to make the wrong decisions. Well worth a watch, or at least a shout out. I suspect it may struggle to get renewed with its current lack of attention. So we have Netflix's time travel show Travelers that's on the bubble. So even if you don't vote for it in the great debate, you could check it out and Netflix will watch your streaming numbers and maybe save Travelers for Zach and people who think with him.
I know. Just have click you got on it once. As far as I know, you don't have to actually watch any of it. You just click on
it. Have either of you guys seen Travelers?
No, I have not. Alas.
No, I have not. But I'll.
Me neither. But
I mean, I would watch an episode. It sounds all right.
Now that I know that it has like this 6 feet under body thing, maybe two episodes. But yes, sounds interesting.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll take this next one because this is a similar. This came via email from James. Maybe not a name you've heard before. But here's what James has to say. He says, I'm sure there will be a lot of strong contenders for best time travel film. I'm personally hoping for an Edge of Tomorrow shout out. You did it yourself there, James.
Yep. Self-fulfilling prophecy.
Even if it inevitably loses, which it will, because it's not spoiler alert. But my favorite time travel show, bar none, is Steins Gate. And as James notes in his email, there is a semicolon between Steins and Gate. There's no space. It's very weird, but it's just called Steins Gate, an anime adapted from a video game about a gaggle of geeky Japanese college kids who accidentally create a time machine in their apartment. This show has no business being as good as it is, but through pitch-perfect direction, surprisingly well-researched world-building that explains time travel better, perhaps, than any other piece of media, well, big claim, deeply affecting characterization, and a unique plot that successfully transitions the show from nerd-ass shit slice of life to nail-biting thriller by the halfway mark. Steins Gate delivers on all the massive potential of time travel narratives in one neat little package. And aside from being a seminal piece of time travel fiction, it's also one of the best shows I've ever seen, full stop. Regularly rewatch it, subbed or dubbed, both are great. Well, that's good to hear.
Ooh, both.
To remind myself of what exceptional storytelling is all about, normally I wouldn't pitch an anime for a great debate. Thank you for capitalizing that. Since the genre is a little too niche for many, but this show is about the length of your average Netflix season, and it's available legally for free in the US and probably Canada through the Funimation YouTube channel. So it's really easy to give it a shot. The show can get pretty intense, and there are times it could stand to be more sensitive thanks to cultural differences and coming out in 2011. Okay, I get that. But I still maintain that Steins Gate is a must-see experience, and it more than deserves to be considered among the finest time travel shows ever made. Awesome. That's a good recommendation. Strong explanation. I would say if you're anime curious, that actually sounds like maybe an interesting entry point.
All right. I'm going to get... Excellent. I'm going to hit our last two listener submissions. The first one comes from Jennifer. And she says, my submission is 12 Monkeys, but the TV version. The final season wrapped up last summer. It's one of the most interesting time travel mythologies around. It very quickly deviates from the source material into the coolest time travel show, plus some faces you haven't seen since early 2000s teen movies. And I looked up, because I have not seen 12 Monkeys, the TV show, I looked up who she might be talking about. There's Aaron Stanford, a.k.a. Pyro from X-Men. There's Amanda Schull, who you might know from the cult classic Center Stage, and more other people after that as well. So, you know, it's, you know, it's 12 Monkeys based on a movie that we might hear from again. Okay. And then the last one is from Josh in the Slack. And Josh submitted Dark, which Americans can find on Netflix. And Josh wrote, it's been a while since I've seen it, but I remember Wormholes, Family Drama, and German. Also, it's easily in the top five Netflix seasons that I've watched. Okay, so the Slackers were so enthusiastic about Dark that they actually got me to watch some of Dark. And
oh, how far did you make it into Dark? I've tried this too. How far did you make it?
No, I made it like 5 episodes, I think.
Okay, you made it further than me. I stopped and I'm like, I need assistance on this. Yeah. And then I never picked it back up.
Our lovely Slackers furnished me with a non-spoiler family tree, which is essential.
Is good.
So you need to have this. It's like a Russian novel. You need to have the family tree at the beginning and keep flipping back to it to understand what's happening. It's also in German. Our Slackers recommended you do not watch the dub version. Watch the German. Watch it with the subtitles. So subs, not dubs, is what they said. And use the family tree. Google like non-spoiler family tree, because there is a spoiler family tree out there. And it is, I really liked it. It's very compelling. It's really, really good. Just like, there's a lot of characters, so it's a lot to keep track of, and it is in German, so you can't like multitask. You have to like watch the screen, read the subtitles, which is so much to ask in 2019. But no, it's well worth it, and it is good. Like if you think of like the naughtiest, and by naughtiest I mean K-N-O-T-T-I-E-S-T, but also maybe the N-A-U-G-H-T-I-E-S-T, family trees on Game of Thrones, and then add the potential that like some of those characters are actually also older or younger versions of themselves that you don't find out about until later. And you've got like some real soapy stuff going on in Dark, but like all with.
Would you say that it gets dark?
Uba dark, yeah, yeah. It's good. It's really good. So I liked it a lot. But yeah, you need to have some tools in order to figure it out. Also, our friend of the show, Kim Renfro, I know, wrote a lot of really good explainer posts over on Business Insider when that was airing. Like, it first came on my radar because Kim was covering it in a really heavy way, and usually what Kim likes, I like. So there you go. Dark, Netflix, Josh's suggestion.
Nice. We got two subbed listener TV shows. Star Wars spoilers spreading out. We're going to take on time travel movies right after this short break. It's the dream. It's that time of the week again where we thank our Small Council Patreon members. This time, we're going to be thanking, or I would like to thank, new Small Council members, Cassidy, Bree, Mattia, Ross, Stewart, and then returning Small Council members, Liz Roller, Rosie O, Billy Bosky, and James Cooper.
I also have some people that I'd like to thank this week. Let's go with Tyler Hannon, Jennifer Quinn, Kurt Klein, Melanie Shu, Vanessa Marshall, Corey Hilsey, and Kelly Grady.
I would like to thank Spencer Howard, Young Lee, Michael Sample, Sverir Sigfusson, Sverir, by the way, whose name I'm sure I just massacred, just like recently doubled his pledge, apropos of nothing, for no good reason. So he's like ultra uber Patreon subscriber. Anyway, Amy Reichert.
It's like for the name. It's the challenge. Here's,
apologies for doing this, but
here's an extra something for you.
Amy Reichert, Fanny Martin, and Patrick Sullivan. Thank you all so much. We really appreciate it.
And we're back to talk about best time travel movie. This one's going to be slightly more populous than the other ones, I think, because Neil jumped in and took what one of my favorite time travel movies of all time. So much so that I, you know, recently for the 25th anniversary, I think it was, managed to get a book of all the, like, these making up things. I have a Save the Clock Tower flyer now. Neil, spoiler. What's your pick?
Yeah, what is your pick, Neil? Save the Clock Tower. I have no idea.
No, it's all good. Obviously, it's Back to the Future. It's a movie about a young man trying to find himself in the world who has a friend who's an old weirdo scientist and sends him back in time where he gets hit on by his mom. And he saves his parents' relationship from a bully who comes back and eventually becomes president in a sequel and really sort of painted what our current hellscape is like. Anyway, Back to the Future, one of the great time travel movies, probably one of the most seen, widely seen. So, you know, that's
it. Oh, that's it.
Back
okay.
to the Future.
I'm glad Neil picked this because I would have gone on for at least 10 more minutes.
I don't think you need anything else. It's Back to the Future. It's good. It has two slightly less good sequels.
We have an annual New Year's Day party here at our house. And this year I just put on Back to the Future in the background. And then it just ended up being a Back to the Future watch party. So we watched all three movies. And I don't think I'd seen two in a really long time.
So people come to your house. They get roped into taking a bunch of free movie swag. And then you make them watch cool movies.
Yeah. Joanna's house sucks.
Man,
also,
those
I feed
dinner
them.
Parties suck.
Anyway, I mean, like, what perfect film the first one is, and what okay films the next two are. They're still great films. There's just, like, you know what's weird about Back to the Future 2 and 3? Is that, like, they just suddenly out of nowhere invent that Marty McFly hates being called chicken when it's not a plot point of the first one at all. And you're like, what? You can't do that. Also, the fact that Crispin Glover's like, no, thank you. I don't want to be in these movies. Bye. So, it's interesting.
Yeah, no, the first one, honestly, it is one of those trilogies that I like revisiting. But if the first one was the only one, it would still be where it is today.
Absolutely. Dave. Yeah. Or me.
Well, it's or you.
You.
Okay, I was going to be super trolly and pick Back to the Future Part 2 and explain why that's actually the better time travel movie, but instead, I'm going to jump right into the old snake's nest I always do and insist that the Terminator franchise makes sense thanks to Terminator 2 Judgment Day, the movie where Arnold Schwarzenegger's Terminator isn't bad, surprise. He's fighting the T-1000 to save John Connor. The surprise of the movie isn't anymore because it's the best Terminator movie. So if you're going to watch a Terminator movie, watch Terminator 2. So I guess like the whole first quarter of the movie might read weird if you're not watching, I don't know, back to back. The reveal doesn't work. Everything else about Terminator 2 does. It's a James Cameron chase movie that is about changing your fate by blowing stuff up. But mostly it sets the idea that, by the original Terminator coming back, not only did he famously, cause his, John Connor to be conceived in the first place, but he also, bestowed upon, humanity the technology to make Skynet too early. So the actions of Terminator 2, whether or not you deem them to be fully successful, depends on which Terminator timeline you end up later on. If you want to hear more about that, search geek.com Terminator timeline. That's my article with all the things. And the graphics, it makes sense, I swear.
Excellent.
Yeah, not bad.
All right. I'm going to pick something. I'm just going to say a pair of words that you definitely have not heard in the last 20 minutes. And it's the number 12 and the word monkeys. Yes, I'm picking the film 12 Monkeys, which is based on the 1962 short film La Jetée, which I have also seen because I studied film in college. anyway, the film version is, a great Terry Gilliam joint before Terry Gilliam started saying stupid things so that I could hear them and hate them. Back when he was just like that weird guy who made some fun, weird fun, fun movies.
The Monty Python guys directing movies.
And they're so surreal and fun and weird, and I love them so much. So just don't Google anything he said in the past, I think, decade, and you'll be safe. This version stars Bruce Willis in one of his best performances. Brad Pitt in definitely his best performance. Madeline Stowe and Christopher Plummer. And it's one of those self-fulfilling looping, time looping back on itself in a way that you're just like, oh, at the end. We talked about Shyamalan last week and the twists at the end and stuff like that. And I feel like, the twist at the end of 12 Monkeys really does kind of make it. I mean, it's the same as the twist at the end of La Jetée. So if you've seen that, spoiler alert, but, that revelation moment, I wouldn't want to spoil. Not that it's like too hard to figure out once you know that there's like a twist to 12 Monkeys, but even if that is spoiled for you, the Brad Pitt of it all, the Bruce Willis of it all. I was listening to our friends, Griffin and David Sims, Griffin Newman on the Blank Check pod, and they had their own Glass episode, which I recommend you listen to. And they were talking about how sometimes Bruce Willis is asleep and sometimes he's awake, for his movies. And this is one where Brucey is awake. So, I'm a big fan. 12 Monkeys. There you go.
Yeah. Awake Bruce Willis and like coked out. Well, not, he's not actually coked out, but with manic Brad Pitt. Yeah.
Good.
With
it's good
doing
shit.
Something with his eye.
Yeah.
It's pretty great.
All right. We're going to roll right into some listener suggestions, starting with me, I guess. This nomination comes from Alice in the Slack. Technically the inclusion of this, I guess, is a spoiler for this movie, but so you can hop forward if you want a little bit, but we're going to read it anyway because I think it's really worth talking about. From Alice. Nominating the best time travel movie is actually a spoiler for that movie, so I apologize, but it has to be done. The film is called Your Name. It is the best time travel movie. A stirring, soaring, immaculately beautiful love story about the connections that lie between all of us, about the longing always there for the things you don't have, the lives you can't live, about the things that only that won't leave us, won't stop haunting us, even if we forget them, even if they are only shards of dream that scratch in the long halls of thought. A love story that remembers, above all, that to love is to learn to grow, to transform. As for why it's great time travel, well, because it's those connections, the threads between us and others, between communities, between the past, the present, the future, between every human being. It's all those threads that make up the fabric of time that brings the travelers together for acts of courage and love and determination. The time travel the movie gives us is utterly thematically grounded, plugged directly into the thumping heart of the story. So that is Alice's beautiful recommendation for Your Name. I will just say really quickly that, just to give you some facts, that this is a Japanese film from 2017, right? And that it is like a body swapping story. And it's also it's a specific genre of Japanese animation that is I learned about this after watching it from a friend of mine who knows more about this than I do. It's called like a red string story. Why are you laughing at me, Dave?
Oh, just because I also have a friend who explains anime genres to me. Okay. I'm like, what's a harem show and why is nobody embarrassed to be watching?
It's like, hold on, let me go check with my anime splainer friend.
Exactly.
All right, so this was anime explained to me as a red string story. So that's just, I don't know, something to Google and enhance your watching experience of Your Name from Alice. Dave, what is your listener suggestion?
My listener suggestion is an email from Ryan S., who says, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. It seems like Ryan S. was, like, early to the call here because he got some good picks. Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure is the best time travel movie because it best captures how time travel might actually work. First, I will travel to the end of this review to remind you of this thesis exactly. Anyway, Okay, Ryan, you have my attention.
Ryan's
to your writings now.
For this
yeah,
one.
Here we go. Anyway, a key scene exemplifies the film's casual yet consistent approach to time travel, where our wild stallions need a key in the present, so they simply have to remember to leave it for their past selves in the future. Doc Brown isn't the only one thinking fourth dimensionally. Multiple timelines are not needed to explain this adventure. William S. Preston Esquire and Theodore Logan also managed to cover more ground than most movie time travelers, covering 3,000 years from ancient Greece to the utopia their music inspired. It also actively engages with two key aspects of the time travel genre, wrestling with determinism and learning from the past. Not only do our heroes take on the challenge of their own future, but they learn to appreciate history, even if there is a language barrier between 1980s California and Socrates. When I look at philosophy, when I took a philosophy of time travel class in college, shout out to Dr. Hanley and the loans from the past that I'm still paying off in the present and future. This was the only pop culture example we studied that didn't create any paradoxes or alternate timelines. Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure is the best time travel movie because it best captures how time travel might actually work. That's a complete argument.
Man, that's going to be a tough one to follow, but I'm going to try, and I'm going to try with two. This first one comes from Baja Cobra in the Slack. I would like to stand for Primer as the best time travel film. It takes the rules so seriously, and while hella confusing, that's super true, the more you watch it, the more it makes sense. It manages to take a high concept and place it in a tiny world about a guy who feels like the world keeps beating him down, so he's going to get what's his. Shane Carruth is so great in it and at directing it. It is a great film. Also, I would like to second this one. Primer is great, and everything about it that he just said is true.
If I had to pick between...
It's hella confusing.
Yeah,
but,
that's another one where, like, infographics help you watch Primer.
Right.
But if I had to pick, though, between Primer and Upstream Color, I'm more of an Upstream Color person myself.
Mm. I mean, as far as Shane Carruth movies go.
Yeah.
Okay, and then the final one is more of a question from Annie AK in the Slack. Does Arrival count? And I wanted to answer this by saying I believe so, because Arrival is about a form of time traveling across, like using information from the future to impact the present. So it is a little body swappy. Because it's all about like a linear, non-linear version of time.
But I think
Arrival counts.
I don't know. This might need
but
to
we could debate
poll.
It.
Like, does Arrival count? Because I think Dave and I said no. And like, for two things I would bring up. One is, like, do stories about psychics count then? Because that uses like future knowledge to inform present sort of, you know, timelines. And then secondly,
well, if the psychic is changing their own life, I guess.
Okay.
So if they're just telling somebody else what's going to happen, then that's not really.
What? Why does that matter?
Well, so okay, and this is a huge spoiler for Arrival. I'm going to do it.
Okay.
So at the end of Arrival, unless I totally misunderstand the end of this movie, the main character learns a language and can now see time in a non-linear fashion, so she can see events in her life simultaneously. And what she does to save the day is she uses information from the future.
That's true.
To bring it back to the past.
A phone number.
Change the past.
Right.
And still somehow, it's a phone number. So she gets a phone number in the future, brings it back to the past, uses it to change the future. And then in the future is like, that's what's up.
It's true. It's very Constant-y. That's true. What do you think?
So, yeah, and it's so I think it's time travel.
The Trial Famadorians.
Anyway. Okay, sorry.
The Trial Famadorians are fourth dimensional. They don't travel in time. They experience all periods of time at one place. That what you're describing is a fourth dimensional sight to me, which is not time travel. But that being said,
listen, I'm just here to fight for fourth dimensional representation in this poll.
They
have been held
down
for too long.
Not all fourth dimensional beings. but then again, the Toynbee convector isn't necessarily pure time travel.
Oh.
If you give a certain point of that, it's actually much closer to Arrival. So I think we have to include it so I can also include my fiction choice.
All right.
All right, cool.
I'll take
that deal.
Fine, 2-1. All right, I have one final question for you guys. It's an instant live poll that I did not prep you for.
Yeah.
Go.
Which time travel property has the better theme song? Is it bum 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 ba da da bum bum, or is it ooh ooh boo doo 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 doo? You guys get to decide.
I will admit to something. This is one of my hotter takes. I have never liked the Doctor Who theme. It's
what about
sort of aggressive.
Like, what if I had the bass line and the duck, 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 duck?
I mean, it gets... See, this is the thing about the Doctor Who theme song, is that it gets better the more it goes on. Like, the second verse, I guess, is better. Whereas the Back to the Future one is good the whole way. So, it's...
I mean, I would use almost the exact opposite language to explain the same thing, which is like the Doctor Who thinks like, here the fuck we go, and it's all the same. Back to the Future, that score, that's that one part of the score.
Well, I'm talking about like quality wise.
Like, oh no, I feel has, like I like the Doctor Who one like,
the longer it goes on.
Da, da,
but I feel
da,
like
da,
also, da, 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 it's,
and then we're in suspense,
me.
And then da, 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 and then a success. Oh, yeah. No, I think the Back to the Future one's deeper. Da, da, da. It's like, is he gonna make it? Yes, he's gonna make it. We're all gonna make it.
You're right.
Da, 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 yeah. Da, da.
Back to the Future wins. I will just give Doctor Who this edge. My brother-in-law once told me that his brother, so my like brother-in-law-in-law or whatever, used to walk around the house as a teenager with a bass, low slung, plucking out the bass line and then just going around the house. And that sounds really fun. So if I played the bass, I would definitely do that, especially to annoy Neil.
Okay.
But let us know. This won't be an official poll, but you can let us know which is the better theme song, Back to the Future or Doctor Who.
That's right. And if you're listening to this episode, make sure to go to twitter.com/stormofspoilers. There's going to be some polls and you could decide, because that's how great debates work. They're democracy-based. Democracy.
For the most part.
Ugh, you win again, democracy. I'll get you next
That's right.
Time.
We're going to run through it real quick. For Time Travel Fiction, we have The Toynbee Convector, To Say Nothing of the Dog, X-Men, Days of Future Past, Slaughterhouse-Five, Paper Girls, and Harry Potter, The Prisoner of Azkaban. For Time Travel Show, we have Legends of Tomorrow, Quantum Leap, Doctor Who, Travelers, Steins Gate, and 12 Monkeys and Dark. Woo. And for time travel movies, we have Terminator 2, 12 Monkeys, Back to the Future, Your Name, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, Primer, and Arrival Counts.
And that's going to be a good one.
It's going to be a throwdown on the Twitterverse. Meanwhile, while you're all voting, Neil, what are we preparing for next week?
Oh, guys, it's here. It's here, y'all. It's the first ever Choose Your Own Storm, in which we'll be discussing The Expanse, of which we will all have watched all three seasons. Three, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, three seasons. Yeah.
So it's interesting because we're going to do this episode next week, and then maybe if you could watch all three seasons if you want. There are two available to stream on Amazon Prime now. They're all three going to be available on February 8th if our episode happens to hook you in. You will be able to stream all of this easily, even though right now the third season is not as easily streamed. So definitely dip your toe into it if you haven't yet, so you know what we're talking about. We're going to do three seasons, which is going to involve some spoilers because The Expanse is really cool.
It's a space noir, right? Space mm-hmm. Space Chinatown, as opposed to the novels, which are two.
What did I call it? Battlestar Chinatown?
Yeah, Battlestar Chinatown. Like
Battlestar Galactica and Chinatown.
Yeah, as opposed to the hard sci-fi, to paraphrase Martin Starr, of the novels. And just to let you know, it's like a slow cook. It's a warm, you have to get there, but it gets there. And also, like, this is the journey you're going to have with Tom Jane's hair. You're going to be like, this is the stupidest shit I've ever seen. Then you're going to be like, this is the best shit I've ever seen. So.
More Tom Jane. All the other characters are lesser.
I actually do remember while watching season one, and this is a preview of next week's episode, leaning over and saying to my roommate, I wonder how much he got paid to cut his hair like that. Like, I wonder how much extra he got for the hairdo. No.
And then you get to the scene where he cuts it again. You're like, I didn't realize how much I missed it while it was growing out.
Spoilers for a haircut later.
Oh, hair watch. All right. We're going to be talking about The Expanse next week, so make sure to check it out. It's streaming on Amazon Prime. If you want to give it a look. Da, 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 da. Okay, until next week, where can people find more of your work online? Joanna, I'm sorry, it sounded like I interrupted you, so I'm going to let you go first.
Yeah, you can find me at Hasta La Vista, baby, on Twitter.
Oh, and Neil Miller.
You can find me on Twitter at Rejex and on the internet at comewithmeifyouwanttolive.com.
And you can find me on Twitter at DA70 and my other podcast, findingthewarroom.com. Why are we making Terminator jokes?
I don't know.
Did I miss something? If we're making Terminator jokes, I'm not actually Christian Bale. I just skinned him and I'm wearing his skin.
Oh!
Don't fall down.
Good for you!
Yeah, Google that one.
Yes, please Google every reference I made this podcast, except little Boy Crotch magazine. Yep. That was this week's Time Travel Gate Today. Don't fall down. We'll see you next week.